and pointed in the direction of Mbaino, and said through gleaming white teeth firmly clenched, "Those sons of wild animals have dared to murder a daughter of Umuofia." He threw his head down and gnashed his teeth, and allowed a murmur of suppressed anger to sweep the crowd. When he began again, the anger on his face was gone, and in its place a sort of smile hovered, more terrible and more sinister than the anger. And in a clear, unemotional voice, he told Umuofia how their daughter had gone to market at Mbaino and had been killed. "That woman," said Ezeugu, "was the wife of Obuefi Udo," and he pointed to a man who sat near him with a bowed head. The crowd then shouted with anger and thirst for blood. Many others spoke, and at the end it was decided to follow the normal course of action. An ultimatum was immediately dispatched to Mbaino, asking them to choose between war on the one hand, and on the other the offer of a young man and a virgin as compensation. Umuofia was feared by all its neighbors. It was powerful in war and in magic, and its priests and medicine men were feared in all the surrounding country. Its most potent war medicine was as old as the clan itself. Nobody knew how old. But on one point there was general agreement, the active principle in that medicine had been an old woman with one leg. In fact, the medicine itself was called Agadi Nwayi, or Old Woman. Page 12. It had its shrine in the center of Umuofia, in a cleared spot, and if anybody was so foolhardy as to pass by the shrine after dusk, he was sure to see the old woman hopping about. And so the neighboring clans, who naturally knew of these things, feared Umuofia, and would not go to war against it without first trying a peaceful settlement. And in fairness to Umuofia, it should be recorded that it never went to war unless its case was clear and just, and was accepted as such by its oracle, the oracle of the hills and the caves. And there were indeed occasions when the oracle had forbidden Umuofia to wage a war. If the clan had disobeyed the oracle, they would surely have been beaten, because their dreaded Agadi Wayi would never fight what the Igbo call a fight of blame. But the war that now threatened was a just war. Even the enemy clan knew that. And so, when Okonkwor of Umuofia arrived at Mbaino as the proud and imperious emissary of war, he was treated with great honor and respect, and 2 days later he returned home with a lad of 15 and a young virgin. The lad's name was Ikemefuna, whose sad story is still told in Umuofia unto this day. The elders, or Di Chie, met to hear a report of Okonkwo's mission. At the end they decided, as everybody knew they would, that the girl should go to Ogbuefi Udo to replace his murdered wife. As for the boy, he belonged to the clan as a whole, and there was no hurry to decide his fate. Okonkwor was therefore asked on behalf of the clan to look after him in the interim. And so for 3 years, Ekemefuna lived in Okonkwor's household. Page 13. Okonkwor ruled his household with a heavy hand. His wives, especially the youngest, lived in perpetual fear of his fiery temper, and so did his little children. Perhaps down in his heart, Okonkwor was not a cruel man, but his whole life was dominated by fear, the fear of failure and of weakness. It was deeper and more intimate than the fear of evil and capricious gods and of magic, the fear of the forest and of the forces of nature, malevolent, red in tooth and claw. Okonkwo's fear was greater than these. It was not external, but lay deep within himself. It was the fear of himself, lest he should be found to resemble his father. Even as a little boy, he had resented his father's failure and weakness, and even now he still remembered how he had suffered when a playmate had told him that his father was Agbala. That was how Okonkwor first came to know that Agbala was not only another name for a woman, It could also mean a man who had taken no title. And so Okonkwo was ruled by one passion, to hate everything that his father, Onuoka, had loved. One of those things was gentleness, and another was idleness. During the planting season, Okonkwo worked daily on his farms from cockcrow until the chickens went to roost. He was a very strong man and rarely felt fatigue, but his wives and young children were not as strong, and so they suffered. But they dared not complain openly. Okonkwo's first son, Wo Ye, was then 12 years old, but was already causing his father great anxiety for his incipient laziness. At any rate, that was how it looked to his father, and he sought to correct him by constant nagging and beating. Page 14. And so Wo Ye was developing into a sad-faced youth. Okonkwo's prosperity was visible in his household. He had a large compound enclosed by a thick wall of red earth. His own hut, or obi, stood immediately behind the only gate in the red walls. Each of his three wives had her own hut, which together formed a half-moon behind the obi. The barn was built against one end of the red walls, and long stacks of yam stood out prosperously in it. At the opposite end of the compound was a shed for the goats, and each wife built a small attachment to her hut for the hens. Near the barn was a small house, the medicine house, or shrine, where Okonkwo kept the wooden symbols of his personal god and of his ancestral spirits. He worshipped them with sacrifices of kola nut, food, and palm wine, and offered prayers to them on behalf of himself, his three wives, and eight children. So when the daughter of Umuofia was killed in Embaino, Ikemefuna came into Okonkwo's household. When Okonkwo brought him home that day, he called his most senior wife and handed him over to her. "He belongs to the clan," he told her, "so look after him." "Is he staying long with us?" she asked. "Do what you are told, woman," Okonkwo thundered and stammered. "When did you become one of the Dichie of Umuofia?" And so Woye's mother took Ikemefuna to her hut and asked no more questions. Page 15. As for the boy himself, he was terribly afraid. He could not understand what was happening to him or what he had done. How could he know that his father had taken a hand in killing a daughter of Umuofia? All he knew was that a few men had arrived at their house, conversing with his father in low tones, and at the end he had been taken out and handed over to a stranger. His mother had wept bitterly, but he had been too surprised to weep. And so the stranger had brought him and a girl a long, long way from home through lonely forest paths. He did not know who the girl was, and he never saw her again.